It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's Tuesday, March 26th, and if there's one thing we know about this Supreme Court, it's not afraid of abortion precedent. We start here. A landmark case heads to Washington.
It's a case with potentially enormous implications for women across the country.
This could dramatically reshape what it takes to get the abortion pill in every state, red or blue. Sometimes it's not all about the Benjamins, it's about the evidence.
Sean Combs denies all of this.
The homes of P. Diddy were just raided in a sex trafficking investigation. And he's the face of baseball. Is he also the face of a gambling scandal?
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports.
Why the secretive Shohei Ohtani says this all got lost in translation. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade a couple years ago, it was clear this was the biggest reproductive rights decision in decades, and yet depending on where you live, it might not have affected anyone near you. Well, today, those same justices are set to hear another case that could have sweeping implications for anyone seeking an abortion anywhere in the country.
Abortion is essential!
It makes me deeply fearful. I think that pill access, you know, self-managing your abortion is something that everyone should be entitled to.
This is the case against mifepristone, one of the major elements in the so-called abortion pill. Actually, it's the case against the FDA, which made it easier and easier to obtain mifepristone. Remember, only a third of abortions at this point are performed surgically. The majority of terminated pregnancies rely on this. Today, between advocates demanding more restrictions,
abortion hurts women!
Women deserve better!
And those begging to keep options available, judges will be asked to consider whether this drug should be under heavier restrictions in all 50 states. Kate Shaw is a UPenn law professor and an ABC Supreme Court contributor. Kate, how significant is this case today?
Brad, it's hugely significant. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade just under 2 years ago, it said it was returning the question of abortion to the state so that the people could decide using democracy whether to protect abortion or to limit abortion or to prohibit it altogether. And very quickly after the Dobbs decision in 2022, a lot of states moved, many to restrict or prohibit abortion, some to further protect abortion.
The message that we're sending to Minnesota today is very clear. Your rights are protected in this state.
We are here today to protect life.
The Supreme Court's suggestion that it was going to just stay out of the business of regulating abortion was never going to hold for long. And we already see abortion back in front of the justices in today's case. And it's a case with potentially enormous implications for women across the country, not just in states that restrict access to abortion, but including in blue states where abortion is available and protected.
What are the plaintiffs going to argue here? They're saying, what, that mifepristone never should have been approved in the first place?
Brad, initially they actually were arguing that. The plaintiffs are a group of anti-abortion doctors, and when they filed their lawsuit in Texas originally, they were challenging the original approval of mifepristone, which goes all the way back to the year 2000.
We all should be concerned if a federal agency is just ignoring the law and violating the rules.
And actually, they were successful in the district court, which held that essentially the FDA should never have approved mifepristone and it shouldn't be approved today. Now, that holding never went into effect. The Court of Appeals agreed to a degree with the plaintiffs, not that mifepristone should never have been approved, but that some of the recent decisions by the FDA to loosen the restrictions on mifepristone shouldn't have gone into effect.
Oh, so like they were okay. It was okay back in 2000, but since then it's gotten too easy.
The restrictions have gotten essentially too lax. Now, that's not exactly what the plaintiffs are arguing. They're challenging the way the FDA went about making two rounds of changes to the availability of mifepristone, one in 2016 and then again in 2021. You know, I think the most important of the changes, the one that could really impact availability across the country, is the availability of mifepristone by mail. So that's a 2021 change the FDA made. This was a COVID era change. Physicians had been advocating for the FDA to loosen this restriction so they could provide mifepristone without an in-person visit, which had previously been required. And the FDA did that. So it made mifepristone available without going in person to see a doctor. And that has had dramatic consequences because in states where abortion is legal, you can get mifepristone by mail without ever going in to see a doctor. And that's what these plaintiffs are arguing the FDA should never have done.
Women come into these emergency rooms suffering from abortion drug complications, and our doctors have a sincere conscious objection to facilitating abortion, to potentially ending an unborn life.
And if they succeed, then we would go back to a regime in which you have to go actually not just once, but three times in person to see a doctor to get mifepristone.
Really? In any state, Kate.
Yeah, so this is a federal suit basically challenging the availability under federal law of mifepristone. So the FDA sets nationwide rules, and if these plaintiffs are successful, then the rules will change nationwide. Now, look, there is a black market for abortion pills, even in states where abortion is illegal, and that's not going to, you know, go away, whatever the Supreme Court does in this case. But when we're talking about the conditions in which mifepristone can lawfully be prescribed and taken, we could see an enormous set of new obstacles erected if these plaintiffs are successful in this case.
What's the government going to say in their defense? What is their response to the idea that this was never correctly decided, essentially?
Well, it's both the government and the drug manufacturer, Danko, which makes mifepristone. They intervened in the suit. So those are the two parties that are, of course, defending the current regime of relatively, you know, available access to mifepristone. And they are arguing that the FDA did everything by the books when it changed the regulations surrounding mifepristone.
It was comprehensive. It was thorough. It was done with the best scientists and clinicians looking at this data.
And it says it did that precisely because mifepristone is a very safe drug with a very good track record. And so they realize after years of study and millions of individuals who had taken mifepristone to end early pregnancies, that the restrictions that they had initially imposed actually weren't necessary. They were not medically required. And so the FDA removed them. And look, this is something the FDA does all the time with all manner of drugs. It sets initial conditions on the use of drugs. And after further study, sometimes it reconsiders. So what Danko, the drug manufacturer, and other pharmaceutical companies in this case are arguing is that if these plaintiffs prevail, if they convince the court that the FDA made some fatal error in the way it went about approving mifepristone and regulating mifepristone, that could throw into chaos the entirety of the FDA's drug approval process. Open up the possibility of lawsuits by any plaintiff unhappy with a particular drug who wishes to challenge the FDA's decision to approve a drug. And that's just not something we've seen before. And so they're suggesting that this lawsuit is incredibly dangerous and has the potential to destabilize the entirety of the FDA's drug approval regime, which is, you know, kind of viewed as the gold standard worldwide. And so they say that's what's at stake in this case, not just mifepristone, but essentially every drug we rely on.
Yeah, so sweeping here, the ramifications in literally, like you said, every drug. And just if you're talking about abortion, even the amount of access hurdles that you would now see as a result of this. We'll see what the Supreme Court justices say to these arguments today. Kate Shaw, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, accusations are one thing, federal raids are another. The investigation into Sean Diddy Combs after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
He's one of the most notable names in hip-hop, which is underselling him, really. Sean Combs, Diddy, formerly Puff Daddy, he's got a lot of names, but he's a mogul in every sense of the word. He invests in music, in fashion, in alcohol brands. Forbes has pegged his worth at $1 billion. But in recent months, there's been speculation that this musical legend could be at the center of criminal allegations. And yesterday, his homes were raided by federal agents. ABC senior investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky is with us. Aaron, where was this raid?
There are actually two of them, Brad, at properties associated with Diddy in both Miami and in Los Angeles, carried out by federal agents from Homeland Security Investigations. Law enforcement officials who were familiar with the matter involving Diddy said that this investigation is in New York. It's New York-based and involves the Southern District of New York, federal prosecutors in Manhattan. And it also involves potential allegations of human trafficking, of sex trafficking, after a number of women have come forward with some pretty serious allegations about Sean Diddy Combs that have been filed in different courts around the country.
Yeah, can you describe the kind of broad strokes of what has been alleged by these women? Because it was like three or four women came forward in just the span of weeks.
A number of women, including the singer known as Cassie, Cassandra Ventura, have complained that they were abused by Sean Diddy Combs. In the case of Cassie, when she was 19, and according to her lawsuit, was lured into a professional and sexual relationship by Diddy when he was 37 years old. And her allegations became quite brutal. As alleged, Combs plied her with drugs and alcohol. She fell into dangerous addictions. He took control of her life, everything from her health care to her career opportunities, would beat her, became a domestic abuser, and then completing, Brad, what Cassie in her lawsuit calls his perverse control of her, Diddy ordered her to have sex with other men and effectively trafficked her for sex with others while he watched.
I see, which could potentially be kind of the sex trafficking component of the allegation, I guess. But it's not a given there are charges coming, let alone against him, right? Because he settled with Cassie without even admitting any wrongdoing. So what is Combs saying about whatever this investigation is?
At this point, he denies all of this, all of the civil lawsuits that have been brought against him by women. He says many of them are out for a payday. He has denied all of these allegations. But the way the lawsuits read sounds a lot like allegations against the R&B star R. Kelly, who's since been convicted and imprisoned. And Brad, according to law enforcement sources who know about this investigation, it's been going on for a couple of months, really, as a lot of these women have come forward, but we're told no arrest, no charges are imminent.
Wow, it really bizarre because, again, the scope of what Sean Combs has at his fingertips, the amount of money and the amount of industries he's tied in at this point goes far beyond music. Aaron Katursky, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
If there's one sport that takes gambling extra seriously, it's baseball.
All the baseball gambling legislation goes back to the Black Sox scandal of the 1919 World Series.
Remember, about a century ago, we found out a World Series had been rigged by players and professional gamblers.
I did not bet on baseball. Got too much respect for the game.
One of the best hitters in history, Pete Rose, is still serving a lifetime ban because he bet on baseball.
Once I said I didn't, then I don't think I could go back on it then. I didn't think they could ever prove I did.
Well, over the last week, a new gambling scandal has engulfed the major leagues, and the stakes couldn't be higher because it involves the most popular ball player on the planet.
Grand Slam Shohei Ohtani!
Shohei Ohtani from Japan has become known as the modern-day Babe Ruth because he can both hit and pitch with the best of them. Most baseball experts say what he's done is actually more impressive than any other player in history. He's beginning a new step in his career with the LA Dodgers, but just before the season began, our partners at ESPN broke the news that Ohtani's longtime interpreter has been fired over massive gambling debts paid with cash from Ohtani's bank accounts. And yesterday, the reclusive star went before cameras to address this head-on. Let's bring in ESPN's Clinton Yates, who's been covering baseball forever. He also just took over as the host of one of my favorite podcasts, ESPN Daily. Clinton, first off, I'm a massive fan of the LA Angels, Ohtani's previous team. Like, I grew up in the area, so I was shocked to hear about this. Can you walk us through the weird twists and turns here?
Wow, your neighborhood must not have a lot of people in it. I'm joking, but here's how this all started. Is Ohtani, when he moved from the Angels to the Dodgers, instantly there was a much bigger microscope on his entire life. $700 million deal. The Dodgers spent a ton of money, $1 billion in the offseason. That's with a B, which for non-baseball fans, that is still a lot of cash, even in Major League Baseball terms. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this team was thrust into the spotlight. They're on a trip to Korea as part of the Seoul series, which is played in South Korea, obviously. And over the course of the week, news breaks. Our Tisha Thompson, an investigative reporter, that Ipe Mizuhara, his translator and also friend, had gotten his bets paid off by Ohtani that went through a bookmaker in California.
We became aware that at least $4.5 million in wire transfers had been sent from a bank account with Shohei Ohtani's name on them to a bookmaker.
Ipe told Tisha, who I talked to on our podcast, ESPN Daily, on Friday, if you want to check that out in full detail and get the TikTok, about how this whole situation unfolded. And he told her that at first, Ipe went to Shohei and said, hey, I'm underwater here a little bit. Can you help me out? And Ipe asked him to pay off his debts, and he did.
Mizuhara says he then watched as Ohtani opened his computer, logged on, and followed directions that Mizuhara was giving him based on what he'd been told by the bookmaking operation on how to send a wire transfer.
Now, a day after that happened, Ipe recanted that, and Ohtani's lawyers and representatives said no. In fact, he stole a bunch of money from Ohtani, and Ohtani is not involved in anything gambling related.
Well, and what was shocking about this is the public doesn't hear from Ohtani very often, right? Like, his own teammates didn't know he had just gotten married over the offseason. Like, no one knew he had a girlfriend because he like doesn't share things with the public. So now he rolls up with like a whole new interpreter. What did he say?
Correct. So Monday, there was a press conference at Dodger Stadium. Shohei read from a statement. He did not answer any questions.
Just on a personal note, I'm very saddened and shocked that someone who I'm trusted has done this.
And basically said, my friend betrayed me and lied up and down the media.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports.
I'm not sure how many people are buying that, but that's what he said, and that's what we're going to have to live with. Now, I understand that's a lot of information to process, but here's the main issue. Beyond what you just said, in terms of the stain that betting has had on baseball, sports gambling in California is illegal. Mm. That's the major crux of all of this. Laws were allegedly broken in terms of what this investigation means, and Shohei Ohtani's name is on wire transfers to the tune of a couple million bucks. That is every bit as bad as it sounds. For a Major League Baseball player to have his dude, an interpreter who is a member of the team paid by the team, mm-hmm. involved in any gambling at all, that's just not a good look. And listen, there's a human element of this. It's understandable that your boy would take the fall for you. Mm. But overall, what are we doing? How did you not notice that multiple millions of dollars were missing from your accounts and your best friend was the one doing it and you had no clue of his habits? That's a hard sell for a lot of folks, never mind baseball fans.
Right. The lingering question that Shohei Ohtani did not answer to reporters is why his interpreter slash friend would have access to his bank accounts if he had nothing to do with the gambling. That aside, though, Clinton, I'm curious, why is this so problematic for baseball? You can get a feeling from baseball people right now that they're really worried about the ramifications of the story. Why is that?
Part of the draw, or at least the understanding of the relationship as baseball fans, and I'll even say this as media, had with Ohtani was that, okay, you're a very secretive and private person. You, from a culture standpoint, don't operate the same way in terms of what our expectations are of athletes to kind of be out there and talk, operating under the presumption that you were a pretty good guy. You were one of the most popular humans on earth. I get it. We'll respect your privacy. So when this comes out, and it's like, I didn't know anything. You're kind of like, it feels like a little bit of goodwill has been lost overall in terms of the shine on his name as the face of the sport in Major League Baseball. And that's unfortunate because I don't want to believe that this is something that happened, but I just can't exactly reconcile some of what was told, what was reported, and what is being explained now. And I'm not out here to ban anybody from baseball forever, but it would strike me as really oddball if Major League Baseball didn't do something about this in terms of punishment. Because, again, it just feels like this is not something that you can just chalk up to an oopsies between friends.
Yeah, and the next steps appear to be you got this federal investigation that's already going on with this California bookmaker who the bookmakers pleaded guilty along with several associates. But also, you wonder how aggressively Major League Baseball will investigate all this, not to mention the kind of questions raised about how prolific American sports gambling is right now, even in states where it's not technically legal.
Whole other discussion.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But really interesting stuff. Clinton Yates from our partners at ESPN. Thank you so much.
Anytime, guys.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, they're what the French call les compétents. One last thing is next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And one last thing. Are waiters athletes? The correct response is oui. This weekend in Paris, we saw the return of a tradition of sorts, a race to determine who's the fastest server. Now, if you've been to France, you might be thinking, I've never seen anyone rush to serve me there. Well, apparently, you missed out on these guys. Hundreds of men and women arrived dressed in the required white shirt, black slacks, and bow tie. They had to walk a 1.4-mile course across cobblestone streets holding a tray that carried coffee, a glass of water, and a croissant. If anything spills, you're out.
Well, endurance, ça va. À la fin, mais voilà,
the sweaty winners walked the course in 13 and a half minutes, which they said is nothing compared to their 12-hour shifts. This event started in 1914, but it had been on a decade-long hiatus. It came back because, well, the Olympics are coming to Paris. The cafes are going to be full, customers are going to be in a hurry. If there's ever been a time to make sure servers are hustling, this is it. Organizers said this was the perfect chance to build camaraderie across a jaded industry. French servers are a proud people. You might have heard them described as snooty. They would say they're simply professionals. In a place where they are experts, the customer isn't always right. But I couldn't help but notice that the race winners got tickets to the opening ceremonies. Maybe working for tips does speed everything up. I hope the countdown wasn't in English, or they would not even acknowledge the starting gun. Hey, some fabulous reviews coming in on Apple Podcasts recently. Rebecca Burke says she listens every day. Even when she goes on a trip, she'll come back and listen to episodes she missed just to hear the one last things. I love that. Al says, when I hear Brad, I know I'm going to have a good day. Well, I'm having a great day myself now, Al. Keep those coming in. They really do help us out. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC. Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much up.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 Central on ABC.